Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome back to the Marvel Movie Minute, a daily podcast in which we assemble to explore the films of the Marvel Cinematic Universe one minute at a time. In this, our sixth season, we are looking at The Avengers. I'm Andy Nelson from the Next Reel Film Podcast.
And I'm Pete Wright, and it's Super Grenade Dodgeball Day!
Today we are talking about Minute 82, which begins with Barton's mercenaries approaching Engine 3 and ends with Engine 1 in shutdown. Joining us on the show today, it's Mike Gravano from the Superhero Show Show and Movie of the Year. Hey, Mike.
Hello, Andy. Hello, Pete. And hello, Marvel Movie Minuteers.
Minuteers! How has it been six seasons and we've never heard that?
That's
oh,
fantastic.
Oh, my goodness.
Now we need little hats with like little M's for ears.
The Minuteers.
Oh, definitely.
Absolutely. Well, you know, we like to ask our guests, especially when they first join us this season, is what drew you to pick this particular set of minutes? We'll be talking about this minute and then 83 and 84 with you this week.
It's longtime listeners might remember that I was on the first Avenger, years ago at this point. And Cap is my guy. And so 82, it starts with him being just a total badass. And it shows all my favorite parts of him just like, you forget sometimes the soldier part of the super soldier, and I feel like this minute really encapsulates that.
And he gets grenades again. It's like Cap and the grenades all over again.
Yes,
he does. And where does he put the grenade? He throws it down to the population below. Of course, it would blow up already. But the running joke is how much crap falls off this helicarrier to the populace below, which is
so much.
This minute is full of it.
Thousands of people die in this movie, and it just breezed by. It is.
Just don't even notice.
It's wild.
This minute actually starts with those pieces that Tony had knocked out of Engine 3. Mm-hmm. It starts with those falling and plunging down to New Jersey, and
that's just Jersey.
Yeah,
nobody will notice the difference there.
That's what really Fury was aiming for when he said, "Head south, put the sun on the left, because Jersey's there, and we'll be okay."
What, Camden? Okay, so Camden got a little messed up. That's fine. And it's I guess that debris is important for what Cap's doing. Way worse than that grenade that blows up is the body of that soldier he throws down. That's going to kill a few
just
people.
Just throwing him straight down. Yep.
It's reminding me of his Hydra days back when he was tossing all those Hydra soldiers off of the little drop jets from the Valkyrie.
And I like that throughout they're all killing everybody, right? And that's kind of what the Avengers do. At least with that was Hydra soldiers in First Avengers. Here is like, are these guys mind controlled? Are they just mercenaries? Who knows who these faceless folks are?
Yeah, it's kind of answered in a deleted scene between Loki and Barton when they're talking down in kind of that lair, that underground lair that they're in for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
There is a deleted scene where they're talking about how they got all these people and how they, I can't remember specifically, but the line basically alludes to the fact that S.H.I.E.L.D. has a lot of enemies. And so it was pretty easy to kind of round these people up. So, I don't know, just mercenaries against S.H.I.E.L.D. is, I kind of guess what they are.
Sure, then, you know, f*** them. Oh, shouldn't say things like that. Bleep them.
Bleep them. No, it's fine. Well, okay, but this is a good point to start tracking the mercenaries. You know, when Barton arrived in his Quinjet, as we saw inside, there were two pilots and there were six people aboard with Barton. Mm-hmm. Now, when they disembarked from the Quinjet, three of them he sent to the bridge. One of them he sent to detention. No, sorry. Three of them he sent to the engine room to stop them from fixing it. One to the detention. And he said, the rest, the other three, come with me. We're going to go to the bridge. That means there's one pilot left in the Quinjet. So far, Fury and Hill have taken out at least four people on the bridge. Two of them seem to be confirmed kills. Two of them, Fury just seemed to have knocked out. We haven't seen the one in the detention area yet. And we finally do see the three arriving in the engine room. But what I am so curious about here is, like, if three of them went with Barton to the bridge, how have they killed four of them? And then we'll see a fifth one later in this minute. But anyway, the mercenaries are, I think they must have some people on board who are just like, you know, screw SHIELD. I'm just going to join these mercenaries. Yeah, they're like,
wait, these guys are winning. I'm going to rip off the eagle off my shoulder and now I'm on their side. Or I don't know if y'all are Marvel Snap players, but the Quinjet card, when you play it, does give you two new cards. So maybe this Quinjet is just pumping out new mercenaries.
So many mercs. Yeah.
I like to think that. That'd be great. They just kind of keep coming. They just kind of keep coming until Loki finally says, nope, okay, we're leaving now. Okay, we'll go with that then. But yeah, so we have all these mercenaries. We have these three. Two of them arrive. One comes through the door. He's the one who tosses the grenade. And yeah, the grenade block is just insane. One, because Steve continues doing his insane leaping around on all the broken pieces of this engine, and he knocks it out of the sky. It's just fantastic. Not to mention, we get this really cool camera move from, like, underneath, like a worm's eye view, looking straight up as Steve then leaps at the guy, knocking him down. I mean, it's crazy. This whole sequence is it's a really fun sequence, the way that this whole thing plays.
It plays so much into his, like, parkour / pugilistic fighting style. And so they created an obstacle course for him to have to show that off throughout of it. And it's so sweet. And then when he gets the gun, I do like, at first he's holding it funky. And then he fixes it. And by the time you see, he just keeps moving it until he's like, okay, somebody taught Chris Evans how to hold a rifle. Finally.
Just like right now. Just right now. He's like mirroring a guy in the hallway.
Yes.
Oh, up here. You know what this makes me think is, wouldn't it be great to cast Chris Evans, Captain America, as a doofus in a new movie with Ana de Armas as the badass? That's what I think of when I see this.
Is he the doofus in that? I've seen the poster.
Yes, he's the doofus. Both super spies. Oh, that's delightful. The badass. He's the doofus. Yeah.
His post-Marvel career is a lot of fun. One, because he's fun, but it's just so clear. He's like, I want to do anything else.
Anything.
I just don't want to be Captain America anymore.
You know, I've done this for like 15 years. I'm ready. And if you could cast me in stuff where I could, like, wear a cable knit sweater and just eat all day long, I'm on for that. Yeah, yes. Eat and be cozy.
That's what he's down for. It's very funny. All right, well, we're in the middle of this fight. Steve blocks their grenade and it shoots down below the ship and blows up, which is great. He takes out this first guy. Now, the second guy, he kicks away the second guy's gun. I just got to talk about this move a little bit because I had to watch this a number of times to figure out what was going on. I don't know if I ever fully paid attention and clocked exactly what was happening here, but as I watched it, my eyes were rolling a little bit, because what he does, he kicks the second mercenary's gun, and it actually lands on the upper deck just below the red lever that he's been standing next to. Because later I'm like, how did he get that gun? Did he bring it up there with him? Because I finally realized, oh, the gun actually kicks it up there, and it lands up there.
He's such a strategist.
That's a move. Yeah,
he knows. He's new. Like, I know for a fact I need to end up at the lever. I bet I might need a weapon by the time I'm over there.
So and I will be ready.
Up. Yeah.
It's one hell of a kick. That's all I can say. One hell of a kick to get it so strategically up there. Yeah. Plus, he's got crosswinds and God only knows what else is going on up there.
And we discovered yesterday they fell 5,000 feet in about 10 seconds. So it's rough turbulence up there right now.
Just a cutscene with everybody, Merc, SHIELD, everybody's just puking. Just
yes. Right. Climate math is not in their favor.
No. So, all right. Now, this is the point. I mean, we've already talked about the guy, but he picks up this first guy after he swings him, and he tosses him off the ship. This is the first, I mean, I know we've had Agent Hill and Fury both take out one by shooting them. But this is really, I guess you could say, the first 100% confirmed kill that we have of these mercenaries. I don't know. Maybe he has a parachute, but the way that he's screaming, I kind of don't think he does.
I think when you're infiltrating somewhere, you're trying to be pretty lightweight. Your armor, yeah, your weapons, right. your ammo is already weighing you down. I don't think you're like, well, a parachute just in case.
Yeah, right.
I guess unless you're infiltrating a giant flying boat that you know? Are trying to take down, maybe then you'd be prepared. But yeah, this guy is dead.
No, yeah, he's not going to last. At least this person doesn't have a propeller to fall through like that Hydra soldier back in First
That's
Avenger.
Right.
Yeah, that was, I think we called that the bloodiest minute of Marvel. It was pretty, it's pretty horrifying moment. But this is when the third of the mercenaries does arrive and he starts shooting. This is the one who actually shoots at Steve. Steve, now he grabs this. I don't know. It took me at first. I was like, is this a gun? What is he throwing here? It's actually like a broken pipe or something. He picks it up and he throws it. It shorts a panel out on the wall. It's one of those moments where it hits a panel on the wall and it short circuits it. And I fully expected like a Star Wars moment where the door suddenly shut because, he shorted it. Like, was that a weird thing for him to short something and then nothing happened with it?
Or does it keep the door open? Maybe there's a hidden door that he was keeping open. Yeah, that'd be stupid. I don't know. I reach for stuff sometimes.
It just adds to the ambiance of the fight. Steve is just like, not enough sparks going on. Gotta keep it interesting.
You know, that works. So this is when he jumps back up to the area with the red lever and grabs the gun. So again, now, remind me, Mike, you're a Captain America fan, but is that from the comics or the films or both?
Both. And at this point, that weave in and out. It's, I think, a little before the Avengers is starting in Captain America comics, because my friends, as you do when you're in a group of folks, you start assigning each other roles. And so our friend who was short and hairy, he was Wolverine. We had like pint glasses. The big guy was Hulk. And I was in the army at the time. And so I was Cap. And so I just suddenly had an influx of socks and shirts and hats and things. Just people gave me Cap. And then I started reading them more and more. And then the movies came out. I was like, yeah, this is my guy. That's fine.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
You started answering to Steve.
Yep.
And right. We call it manifesting. You manifested yourself as Captain America.
I say on your left, try to run as fast as I can past people.
All the time. I only make left turns.
Slap every grenade-shaped thing out of the air.
Yes. If you're round and small, look out.
Or you just dive on it and just lay on it in the hopes that nothing happens. Well, okay, so this was my question, though, about Captain America, because I know it came up last season with a number of guests, the idea that this Captain America that we have in the film is somebody who is a soldier and he's using a gun, which as a superhero, we don't normally see him doing.
Right.
Here, we actually have him grabbing a gun and using a gun, though. And is that something that he does often in the comics, or because he is kind of a superhero, does he usually use other methods rather than guns?
I think it really is other methods. And that's when in the comics, when Bucky became Captain America for a while, that's kind of how they differentiated him in all his covers and pictures. Bucky was the Cap who uses the gun. I think at that point in the comics, Steve post war is like, well, I'm still fighting, but it's different. And I should, only smash people's faces in with an unbreakable metal shield. I should no longer use the brutal weapon of a pistol.
Leave them bloody and broken instead of with a whole small hole through them.
Exactly.
The line must be drawn here and no further. Right.
Wow. All right. Well, okay. So to that end, it was interesting. I thought this is something that I don't know. I guess in the scope of all those conversations last season about like, oh, well, he doesn't usually use a gun. This is kind of the war, though. So it makes sense that he's using a gun. And then I'm like, oh, in the very next film, he's using a gun again.
Yeah. So
kind of a bigger gun.
Yeah. I feel like maybe it's not till Civil War and because he's fighting his buddies. And then by Infinity War and Endgame, he feels done with a gun. I can't really remember. He has like spears and he's mostly shielding and leg kicking. But it does kind of feel like his growth through the MCU, right? Because we meet him, he's in World War II. And then here, he just woke up. He's still like World War II Steve.
He still thinks he's in World War II.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be horrific. We find out there's just PTSD going throughout the Avengers. Yeah.
It's a whole, the entire Avengers initiative is fueled by his PTSD.
So,
wow. Well, okay. So this is another question I have with Steve then, because I don't know. I can't remember actually what the answers were, but is he impervious to bullets?
No, he just doesn't get hit. That this specific merc has you know when your brain just dies. Stormtrooper aiming.
Yeah, stormtrooper aim. Yeah.
I was gonna say starship trooper. I was like, that's not right.
That's giant totally bugs. Different. Yeah. Well, it's kind of similar.
Also,
to
yeah. also bad.
Yes.
Although you could say distant relative to the Chitauri.
Yeah.
Oh, facts.
Yeah. So, okay, but, well, that's interesting, because I guess my question, you know, it relates to, does he know if he could be hit by a bullet? You know, because, I mean, we never saw him get hit by a bullet in the last film. We don't know, in the films, if he actually is impervious, or if he's still just instinctively avoiding bullets, because, you know, that's what we typically do is we generally, if we see that, we just don't want to get hit by it.
What you're saying is we're missing like the Jackass sequence where he's oh, standing in an alley with Bucky and he's like, shoot me right here. Shoot me right here.
It's the only way we'll know.
I hate to say yes, but yes.
Yes.
Just a montage of like Ben holding just a lighter on Steve's hand. Just like seeing what his weakness is.
Oh God, yes. That's awful.
Kicking like, him as that. Hard as he can in the crotch. Just like, does that like,
yeah.
Are you strong like, everywhere?
If they hold a lighter to his arm, does his arm hair singe or is his arm hair impervious to that?
Ooh. So that could be a weapon. He just grows his arm hair out and just like sharpens it.
Sharpens his arm
hair. Uses his arm hair like a gauntlet.
Yes.
This new shield is woven from my arm hairs. I've been
that
shaving.
Is like the saddest potential outcome. It turns out like everything we know about Steve is wrong. Only his arm hair is super. It's just protecting him from everything else.
Good God, that's just
it's my secret, Hulk. I'm covered in arm hair. Covered
in arm hair. Oh. Wow, the things we have uncovered about Steve Rogers. Marvel, let us know when you're ready to have this conversation. We can help you out with the next one. Yeah,
I do know in the comics his weakness is bullets because in the Brubaker run from the early 2000s, that is how he dies. Is he's just walking up the stairs in DC and somebody ganks him in the back of the head.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's brutal and so unexpected because you expect spoiler alerts, he comes back, guys. But you're like, well, he'll die maybe if the death of Captain America would be in a big epic battle. And so it comes so unexpected. And that's one of my favorite runs because of that. It's just like, what? And that's like the birth of the Winter Soldier in the comics and everything.
Wow.
That's actually pretty interesting because it does speak to the fact that, I mean, even, you know, earlier in the film, we saw Loki getting hit by some bullets. When the S.H.I.E.L.D. agents were attacking him when he first appears through, you know, through the Tesseract and everything.
Right.
And but it like grazes across his face and he instantly heals. But it does speak to the idea of somebody who is generally, we won't say impervious, but can heal quickly. If it hits you in the right spot, i.e. like a headshot, as gruesome as it is to talk about this, but something where it like goes through your brain and blows out the back. That might be something that even somebody like Loki couldn't necessarily come back from.
Right. That's a real like Hulk and Logan and Deadpool only.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I suppose to a certain extent, I mean, you have a super soldier, somebody who's imbued with this serum to be super in so many different ways. You do have to start delineating. Okay. Well, he can't be exactly the same as Logan. Like we do have to start kind of scraping away some of these things so that they're not all the same. Otherwise it's just like super boring because they're all the same character basically.
And that's so funny with your general super community is everybody like agility or the 90s Marvel Masterpiece cards that said like how much agility they had, how much dexterity. And you're like, well, like they're pretty similar.
The graph is all like right in the same place.
Right? Yeah, right.
He can plus run or minus fast, 5 points, right. But not Quicksilver fast. He can heal, but not Logan heal quickly. Like he is like a few times we see how crazy strong earlier in the movie, not in this minute, when him and Iron Man and Thor are fighting. His arm does not shatter when Thor brings down Mjolnir and he blocks up the shield.
Yeah, right.
Thor's the one who gets blown back. So you're like, how strong is Steve?
Well, yeah, and that of course speaks to the you know, science / magic of the shield itself,
right?
And you know exactly what is it doing when it's getting hit by something like that. So, but anyway. What I do see here, though, as Steve starts taking shots at this soldier, is Steve also isn't a very good shot. And I was like, is it because this is a new type of gun for him or what? Because, or maybe it's just the wind turbulence and everything else that he's dealing with. But he also is pretty bad. Like, both of them are basically stormtrooper level shooting at each other here.
Yes.
What's funny is that Steve is better when he's throwing stuff,
mm-hmm.
right? Yeah. Like throwing pipes and shields and things like that. He seems to be better and does more damage.
I wonder if putting it not as if Disney doesn't want one of their main heroes just fully shooting somebody in the face from 10 feet away. But I wonder if in Steve, like when they used to have to it was like the Revolutionary War and Civil War, back when wars were everybody just stand in a field and look right at somebody and shoot at them and don't hide behind anything. Most of the soldiers were shooting up. Like, I think you really have to train out of somebody to shoot somebody, thankfully. And so maybe Steve's like, I don't mind throwing you 8,000 feet into the air because I don't have to see it, but I don't want to have to see me shoot a gun and it hit you. So he's just like shooting for cover.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And then he throws a guy off the helicarrier and just screams, Skydiver!
Yeah. He'll be fine. I'm fine when I do that.
Right.
Yeah, right. If he's out of sight, out of mind, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
It's like, I'm sure he's fine. There's probably, you know, a nice body of water that he landed on.
Yes.
In or something. Oh, my goodness. Well, all right. So, do we have anything more to talk about with Steve, or should we head into the bridge to talk about Fury and what's going on in there?
I'm happy with heading to the bridge.
We can try, but as we hear, we're not getting through there.
Well, yeah, right. It's an interesting line coming from Fury because, again, this is the fifth mercenary to kind of pop through the door and Fury takes him down. I think this is, as far as he's concerned, confirmed kill number three. I don't fully understand his line. Like, he's talking to himself. He says they're not getting through here. So what the, like, is he confused as to, like, why they keep coming?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Why haven't they given up yet?
Yeah,
so it's not defiant. Yes, it's not defiant. It's like, what are you doing? You're not getting through here.
This is so obvious.
It's such a funny line to have. It's like, what is going on? Like, he just seems so confused with it. Like, why don't they stop?
There was something about watching, you know, I watched this minute a bunch, but watching this whole movie in preparation, there's some lines that didn't used to stick out as clunky, and they do.
Oh, do tell.
And now I'm going to forget all of them, right? But like they're not getting through here. It's like, well, here's what an action movie person would say, and it's like, but what do you mean right now? And I just feel like every few minutes, a character says something like that, and you're like, who are you talking to? And this doesn't make sense at all.
Yes, that is the general peril of watching a movie 1 minute at a time.
Sure.
Like if there's no intention of that, the stupidest lines just fly by and it's really fine because dopamine. This is one where like, what is Fury even thinking right now? Like, why did that line sneak in there? And why did someone like, you know, our pal Tig Notaro, Whedon, write dialogue that comes out as clunky like this when we know they happen to have a distinct ability to write smart dialogue, which I'm always sort of puzzled by.
Well, for every piece of smart dialogue that individual has written, there's also, do you know what happens to a toad when they get struck by lightning?
Oh, yeah.
The same. Most people use that. I actually like that line a lot.
Yeah.
I think that, but like, it's hated on, but I'm like, yeah, that's, that feels like I'm not used to being an action hero. I'm going to try something.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe Fury, knowing he's the commander of this bridge, is saying it for the SHIELD agents who are, you know, kind of acting like not soldiers. They are all, I mean, I know getting attacked is pretty scary, but suddenly they're all like, we're just civilians running around. I have no military training. What should I do right now?
I'm just an engineer.
What?
Right.
Why us? Why us?
It's, I mean, it is, it's very funny, and I do question it. But I mean, hey, you know what? Fury and Hill seem to be doing a great job of keeping them at bay and largely keeping people safe until, as it turns out, Clint has decided to, I don't know if he's been crawling through the air ducts or what, but he's...
Because he has not been around very much in this big attack.
He has not been around at all. And he's the one who led the charge, but he snuck up through this vent, and he's basically in a vent now, way up high, looking down over all of this. And we see him shoot two arrows. The first arrow, I'm so curious about your opinions on his decisions with these arrows, knowing he's mind controlled. The first arrow he hits, it hits the far upper wall and blows up. We see a couple stunt players go flying off. I mean, it's fun. I don't know if it's just meant to be a distraction. But, and then the second one is the one that obviously is the one he wanted to do. It's, according to the Marvel Wiki, it is his data arrow.
Ooh, you gotta have a data arrow.
You gotta have a data arrow. He shoots it, and it conveniently has all of its pins that line up perfectly with the slots so that he can shut down Engine 1. But why, if he's mind-controlled and he is, like, game to take down anybody, why doesn't he aim at Fury at any point and take Fury out or Hill out or something like that?
Well, I guess if you use your bomb arrow on Hill or Fury, they will get blown up and die, but then everybody else could in theory still do their jobs, where if you blow up the wall, then the air sucks you out and it's more chaos going on.
We're going for the rapid rapid decompression.
Yes.
Theory. Okay.
Or some little tiny part in the back of Clint's head is like, I can't take out these two. I know their names, so I'll make sure my arrow kills people's names I don't know.
Yeah. Their names don't end in a bridge number. Yeah. I do think there's more to that. And as we see later in the catwalk, doing their thing on the catwalk later when he gets punched in the face, like, yet more of Clint is coming through the brainwash. That's what I see when I watch this thing. Like, he's emerging.
Right.
Also, data arrow, right? He has data to collect. He can't blow anybody up until he collects his data.
Not collect data, corrupt data, right?
Yeah, corrupt data, right. That's first.
Exactly.
Corrupt.
Well, I guess the issue, this is a frustrating thing to come up, because I know, as somebody who's watched the deleted scenes, we've talked about the deleted scenes, he has this conversation with Loki about why he was unable to shoot Fury that time. I mean, you know, he asked him, and he's like, yeah, maybe there's something that was keeping me from doing that, and I'm unsure. Like, why do they cut things like that? Because it would answer questions when they come up in situations like this.
Yes, that is one of the most frustrating things about that particular deleted scene. And I kind of can't stop thinking about it, just because of the fact that it answers so many things in just like, what, a minute and a half.
Right.
Like, it fixes stuff.
And we have a minute and a half to spare.
Right.
I think.
You seen how long this movie is? Really, we're fine.
I can easily squeeze that back in here.
Yeah.
Yeah, because let's see, that also had, well, I mean, it just had the stuff we were talking about where they got all these mercenaries from. That was also in that conversation. And let's see, I'm trying to remember. And it leads to a little bit about kind of their upcoming plans for Stuttgart. And so, like, there was a lot of information in that scene that really could have kind of helped with all of this and made it a little less, I don't know, just clunky with some of this stuff.
Yeah.
And maybe it's just breeze by. They weren't at the point where they're like, we have to have a cave scene that fight, like, stops all momentum, that Thor is just in Age of Ultron. Right now, they're just like, make it breezy. Let's just go. No explanations.
Yeah, right. Just so I can forget that. Let's just have fun.
Yes.
Oh, well. We do see, you know, the data arrow hits and its pins, as I said, they conveniently fit into the ports. It shuts down the helicarrier's computer systems, plus the fans for Engine 1. And then we see on the screen, aside from the Engine 3 mechanism malfunction, now malfunction Engine 1 has a power loss. And in the scope of all the system diagnostics, Engine 1, Engine 3, and the mainframe have now all been compromised. I don't know why, though, considering all the monitors shut down, I don't know why Fury still manages to stay on, but you know, it is Fury's monitor, I guess.
He's just an iPad that's actually like...
It's just in a case
hanging there, but it's not connected to the rest of the stuff.
It's not connected to the system.
Right. So he could walk around if he needed to around the whole helicarrier while still maintaining all information.
Smart man.
That's all. Yeah, it's all he does when he's not under attack is walk around to the different bridge officers and say Wi-Fi, baby. Like, that's all he does. I have that image in my head.
Did you see how many router extensions I put in ceilings in the hallways?
Wi-Fi.
He's so cool. At the end of this minute, we do get to see Agent Sitwell. He's sitting at his monitor, and his has the detention cell alarm system failure on it before it goes off. And that brings us to the end of our minute. Any last thoughts about anything going on in this minute, or should we close up shop so we can come back and talk about minute 83 tomorrow?
I guess the last thing is just Sitwell. It's so hard to remember. Like, I don't think we know his name here. I think I first learned his name in a Marvel one-shot. It's just like, he's just a guy, and so smart for just being like, well, we cast this kind of nameless guy, let's make sure he's a evil Hydra agent in a couple movies. Like, just
in a couple movies.
Yeah. He did not know in 2012 that he was gonna keep getting bankrolled by Marvel for a while.
Right. Nice work if you can get it, Sitwell.
We'll talk about this in tomorrow's minute, but he's actually not credited as Sitwell in the script at all. He's credited as S.H.I.E.L.D. worker. So it's interesting, like, what point did they decide, we want this person to be a little bit more?
Right.
I wonder if it's the one shot. Like, wouldn't that be weird if it was the one shot that got Maximiliano Hernandez, like, all of the additional parts? Like, they said, hey, we need to bring somebody back to talk with Coulson for this one shot. How about you, S.H.I.E.L.D. worker?
Yeah, you're around because isn't it? It's a funny thing happened on the way to Thor's hammer, right? Isn't that when they meet up and chit chat? Or
that's the one where Coulson. No, it's not item 47. Let's see. A funny thing happened on the way to Thor's hammer is when Coulson stops the gas station robbery
in the 7-Eleven. He goes, John Wick.
Yeah. It is.
There's so many. It's been a minute.
It is. Hold on. Now I got to figure out. It is the consultant.
The consultant.
Yeah, that's the one where they're rewriting the kind of the focus of that end conversation from the Incredible Hulk, so that it's about the Abomination and that whole thing. So
right,
but yeah, good old Marvel one shots. So, well, that's it for a minute 82. So, Mike, tell everybody about some of the stuff that you are up to out there on the interwebs.
Certainly, if you want to hear me and other fine folks talk about every single live action TV show based on a comic book, that is the Superhero Show. But at this point, Sweet Tooth season 2 is out. We are still suffering through The Flash. Gothamites, unfortunately, is doing well. But I swear there's stuff we like out there. But check that out. And if you're like, more movies, that's Movie of the Year, where every season is a different year. We build a bracket and make them fight. Right now, we are wrapping up 2002.
Oh, let's see. Ooh. We just, over in our other show, The Next Reel, we've just finished recording all of our episodes for the Lord of the Rings trilogy. And we were debating amongst ourselves, Two Towers or Chicago? And we still landed on Two Towers. But I know you don't want to spoil.
As Lord of the Rings movies go?
Or just as far as the 2002 movies go.
Oh, like, okay. I was going to say, I prefer Chicago, but I do think Two Towers is probably a better Lord of the Rings movie than Chicago.
Probably does work better.
Yes.
What else is on the bracket for 2002?
What else? We couldn't normally whittle it down to 8, and this year we couldn't. So it's the biggest bracket we've had. We've had 16 movies, which is a lot. Minority Report, Bourne Identity, Russian Ark, which is this crazy artsy movie. It was a phenomenal, interesting, a one shot, which there's a cute little CGI one shot that happens in the Avengers movie. That is fun to watch. But now that I've seen Russian Ark, I'm like, all right, guys. That was supposed to be painted. What else is on there? Talk to Her. There's so many. There's so many freaking movies. So
The Pianist? Is The Pianist that year also? And
The Pianist is that year. And we said, no, that is not one of our 16 movies make it. Because we start with 64 and then we whittle it down to the ones we'll actually watch.
Wow.
And The Pianist didn't make it.
And yeah, we've been like, we've done it. Whatever.
Been there, pianos.
But we got to do Minority Report.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, no, that's a good one. That's a good one. Well, that's awesome. Well, we will have the links for all of Mike's great stuff in the show notes, everybody. So check those out for sure. Mike, thank you so much for joining us today. We're looking forward to having you back tomorrow.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And that's it for today. So, Pete, thanks as always.
Yeah, I don't think the Hellcarrier is going to make it. I'm still thinking it's going to fall to a fiery plume.
Until next time, true believers.
Marvel Movie Minute is a production of True Story FM, engineering by Andy Nelson. This season's music is Message to the World by Anthony Vega, and this season's show art is by Winston Yabo. Find the show at truestory.fm. If your podcast app allows ratings and reviews, please consider doing that for our show.